Will Congress pass anything to address gun violence? That'll be the question when Congress returns to Washington on Monday. A bipartisan group of senators is negotiating various proposals now, and President Biden last night called for banning assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, among other measures.
There have always been limitations on what weapons you can own in America. For example, machine guns have been federally regulated for nearly 90 years, and this is still a free country. This isn't about taking away anyone's rights. It's about protecting children. It's about protecting families. It's about protecting whole communities. It's about protecting our freedoms to go to school, to a grocery store, to a church, without being shot and killed.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us now. Maya King is politics reporter for The New York Times, and Rick Klein is political director for ABC News. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Maya, the president is calling for an assault weapons ban, similar to the ban he helped pass in 1994. That was a 10-year ban that was allowed to expire in 2004. What specifics do we know? Do we think that he's calling for the exact same ban that was passed in 1994?
Well, it's hard to say. I think it's also, you know, important to note that a lot of these conversations around gun policy are very, very early in taking place. And the president will have to work with his colleagues in the very slim majority that he has in the Senate to actually pass any kind of meaningful legislation, though. And what we do know that has been mentioned on the table, possibly raising the age limit from 18 to 21 to be able to purchase a firearm, bolstering these red flag laws in the states that essentially would possibly keep the guns out of the hands of people who might have histories of domestic violence or erratic behavior, and also creating more incentives for the states to pass more stringent gun control laws. But I think really what this will ultimately boil down to is the states, but they will be taking their directive largely from folks in Congress, depending on what exactly they can pass and whether this will these policies will actually prevent another mass shooting in the future.
Rick, to you now, we have seen this cycle of mass shootings and then Congress, people here in Washington talking about it. It often then fades into the background. There's often a window of talking about it. How involved can we expect the president to be pushing Congress to stay focused on this?
The White House says that he mostly wants to remind people that his voice is out there, and he doesn't intend to try to become a senator again. And in fact, he talked about that over his first year, that he made that mistake of being too involved at times in the legislative mess. But I think in this case, he's going to keep the focus on. I think it was telling that he put into the basket of his wish list a bunch of things that really don't have a realistic chance of passing the Senate,
right,
or even maybe the House, when you talk about the assault weapons ban and some other things. And it may be that he's trying to provide negotiating room. He's almost intentionally going broad so that Democrats can go to the Republican colleagues and say, look, what we're asking for here, this is a consensus view. This isn't the whole laundry list of asks. Even though the president is out there calling for it, we're not asking for an assault weapons ban. We're looking for more common sense, bipartisan solutions. But it'll be tricky because he's putting a lot of political capital on the line at a tough time with the midterms looming. The focus of the country right now is on this rash of shootings, but people have short attention spans. We're moving on to gas prices and inflation and all the rest.
But just quickly on this, Maya, does the president's speech help these talks along, or could he get in the way? I mean, he's asking for something very different than what they're talking about at the table.
Well, it certainly sends the message that the White House is paying attention to this and has sort of moved it to the top of its list of priorities, at least for this moment. Whether that further incentivizes folks to actually move, I think is highly doubtful. However, it's clear that a number of his colleagues, particularly Chris Murphy in Connecticut, and Mark Kelly, also in Arizona, are very, very committed to trying to take advantage of this moment, especially where the country's attention, at least for now, is certainly fixated on gun control and what could happen there. And again, if this does ultimately trickle down to the states, possibly creating more energy behind state lawmakers or governors to feel more incentivized to make some more sweeping changes within the capacities that they do have. You know, I think that the president and the White House felt like it was very important for them to actually mention this and talk about it, particularly, as you mentioned earlier, because we've seen this cycle so many times. They don't want to see this repeated. Whether or not that happens, though, I mean, we can't say now.
So the House Judiciary Committee voted along party lines to approve a package of bills yesterday, raising the legal age to buy some semi-automatic weapons and outlawing magazines with more than 10 rounds, among other things. Republicans opposed those measures. Here's Congressman Tom McClintock, Republican of California, calling instead for armed guards at schools.
No one gives a second thought to an armed guard at a bank, yet the left is outraged by the mere suggestion of placing an armed guard at every school filled with innocent children. When are we going to get serious and take the world as it is rather than how we wish it should be?
Rick, can we take this as a reflection of the GOP opinion on these measures?
Largely, yes. I actually think that's pretty representative of what the opinion is among most Republicans in elected office, that the way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, to paraphrase what was said at the NRA meeting a week ago today. I do think, though, there's more nuance in this. First, you're dealing with a situation where there was no resistance met at all and a lot of lapses in Texas. And I think now a rash of shootings where there are similarities in terms of the type of weapon used, the age of the shooter, someone underneath the age of 21 who is nonetheless able to legally purchase a gun, that might change the equation a bit. And frankly, I think there's probably room in the Senate bill for additional training and security at schools. I think if you're looking for a bipartisan compromise, I think some of the Republicans who are part of that, even some Democrats, would say, yeah, it makes sense to take, as Congressman McClintock said, the world as it is and to harden schools where you can. But I know for a fact Democrats won't see that as enough. I think that's where the difference is that some Republicans talk about this as a substitute for additional restrictions on background checks and age limitations. But that's not how the Democrats want this to land.
To this argument, it's important to have good guys with guns argument. Let's hear from the Democratic side, House Judiciary Committee Chair Gerald Nadler.
In Uvalde, there were 7 good guys with guns, and they didn't feel they could go stop that bad guy. The gunman in Buffalo killed a good guy with a gun. We have tested that theory, and there's 31 dead people in these 2 attacks alone because we failed that test.
Maya, the public rhetoric is very familiar on both sides, but beneath the surface, is anything changing in Congress, among lobbying groups like the NRA, or among the American people?
I think the understanding of the state of play closer to the ground among voters and yes, the American people is probably what's come into clearer view, or it's been made very plain that essentially Democrats see this issue of guns and firearm ownership as it relates to mass shootings and violence as a policy issue that should be rectified specifically by further regulation of firearms and perhaps clamping down or taking steps to limit the influence of groups like the National Rifle Association that have largely pushed the talking points that guns are not the problem. And Republicans largely share that view that it's not necessarily firearms that are the issue, but rather that this is a social issue. This is a problem that stems from mental health or broken families or students, young people not getting the assistance or the family background that they need that would force them to resort to violence. I think that more voters realize that on the ground, and it's just been made now very clear in Washington with this debate, which is why it's so difficult to tell at this stage, I think, whether or not what we're seeing, while it obviously is very emotional, very sad, and just has garnered a lot of attention, does that result in policy change on a meaningful level in Washington? It's unclear, and I think that sense of pessimism still, not just among those parents and folks who have been pushing for gun control for decades now, but more people on the ground who are seeing this take place really on a daily basis now in this country.
Well, I want to at least take the last minute to talk about voting. Rick, you are looking ahead to Tuesday, which will be the biggest day of primary voting this year. What should we be looking for?
We're going to learn a lot about the kind of candidates who are running for House seats in particular next Tuesday, not just California all the way through New Jersey. You've got close to 100 seats that are going to have their nominees by the end of the night. And there's a sense of optimism among Republicans, but maybe the best thing that can happen to them is some of the candidates that are coming into view. It might be that some candidates end up being unelectable for general elections. Meanwhile, it really is a case of Democrats holding on for dear life. We see this in Iowa, New Jersey, also California next Tuesday. Embattled, endangered Democrats just fighting the headwinds. What are they able to do to message this in a different way? We saw the president try to turn to the economy this week and inflation, but it is just such a tough political environment.
Rick Klein is political director for ABC News. Maya King, politics reporter for The New York Times. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.